And joining us on the phone right now from actually in Washington, D.C., is Mark Dimunation. Mark is chief of the library's Rare Book and Special Collection Division and joins us, as I say, from Washington. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to be with us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
As I understand it, you're a Minnesotan.
I'm a Minnesota boy, yep, from St. Anthony Village.
Oh, wonderful. Well, nice to have you with us. And I'm just going to digress just for a second. I don't know how old you are, and I won't ask, but back in the 60s, there was somebody on the Twin City radio by the name of Mel Jazz, and he used to have a daytime show, and he would talk to housewives about various stuff. And he'd always ask them, now, what does your husband do? And no matter what they'd say, he'd say, oh, he's got a good job. And in my mind, chief of the Library of Congress's Rare Book and Special Collection Division has got to be a great job.
It's a nice sandbox to play in.
Well, I would think so. We called to talk about several months ago, I guess probably I first noticed, that as part of the Library of Congress's celebration of the book exhibition, you had an exhibition and also a list of the books that shaped America. And as it turns out, there were 88 books on that. And for those of our listeners who are thinking, wow, let's quick hop in the car and drive out there, the exhibit unfortunately closed. The list stays on. But whose idea, how did this, books that shaped America, how did that concept come about, Mark?
This grew out of a conversation at the Library of Congress. We're launching a three-year effort built around the book, and more particularly built around people reading. And we thought a good launch for the National Book Festival would be to do an exhibition. The title actually doesn't have a lead article, which is very important. It's simply called Books That Shaped America. And that is because we're not necessarily trying to be overly prescriptive here. And the 88 only happened because that's as much room as we had. But I kind of like the fact that it isn't 100. And it was really launched to spark a dialogue. And I have to say, this was one of the most heavily responded to exhibitions the Library of Congress has ever done. People were asked to submit their inclusions for the list, books that had personal meaning to them. We asked people to add books to the list in case we did another round of this. Dialogues going on in the exhibition area, and as we're experiencing right now, the exhibit carries on in this dialogue, even though the books have been taken down.
You actually already answered one of my questions, and that is why 88, not 75, or as you said. And you know, the other problem with it does get pretty prescriptive.
Right.
I think that's the other problem with 100. It's like, okay, here are the 100 best books ever written.
I agree. We were actually trying to avoid that whole notion of lists. Yeah.
And when you say that you had room for, I assume you mean in the exhibition, the physical space of the exhibition itself.
That's correct.
Now, when you say people gave ideas as far as the various books and why, but who were the people that made up the list? Who decided what books shaped America?
This was a small committee of curators from the Library of Congress. We each came to the table with our list, and that started the kind of original sort of rough draft of possible inclusions. We talked it through. We then finally submitted queries to almost all the other curators in the library, especially people who represented areas that we weren't personally strong in, like science or economics, that kind of thing, to make sure that we had kind of covered the waterfront. But it was a smallish group and a large pool of books to play with.
So how many people were sitting around a table saying yes or no at any one given time?
Probably the group that decided the list was a group of six people.
Wow. That's amazing. Even with that small a number, that you could come up with a list of any number of books that you could all say, okay, we got it now, this is it. And the discussions must have been very, very interesting.
They were pretty passionate, I have to say.
I believe that.
And we had to keep in mind several things. First and foremost, this is not a list of the best books.
Right.
And in fact, some of these books weren't really well received and have been ridiculed in their own time. What we were looking for were books that fundamentally shaped the way in which Americans saw themselves, the way in which they described themselves, or a book that had an impact on the way in which Americans suddenly realized the existence of a problem that previously hadn't been within their range of view. So we were looking for books that really had impact, either immediately or in some cases long term.
Now, the list that I was looking at, in fact, ran copies of, categorized them by, chronologically. So there were so many from 1750 to 1800, so many 18, you know, going by 50 years. Obviously, the later that you got, more recent that you got, the more books you had. And I think perhaps that makes sense if you think about from 1750 to 1800. I'm assuming that most of the books that Americans were reading were not, in fact, published here. So, but was there any sense that, well, we ought to try and represent any one time period like equally or in relation to another time period or no?
You know, we really tried to come to the table blank. We did not try to fill in gaps for every decade. Mm-hmm. We weren't immediately paying attention to chronology. That is, we weren't making sure that we had all the entire span of American development covered. We tried the same also with genre and format to a certain extent. And frankly, even in terms of representation of groups, we tried very hard to be representative, but we really felt that what was important is that these books represent the voice of change in America themselves rather than developing a kind of checklist of who should be on this list.
Sure. I found it very interesting, obviously, as one would hope, I guess, a large variety in terms of genres. There are novels. There are, as you said, books talking about issues that perhaps people hadn't thought about before, or at least issues that were important at the time those books were written. There are kind of almost how-to books. Very few biographies or autobiographies. Benjamin Franklin, Malcolm X, a couple of others. Do you think that that's because there is a natural, at least one would assume, perhaps a natural bias in an autobiography or a biography?
Well, I think
it may or may not reflect what the rest of the community believes.
Yeah, I think it's more so that they would be judged on literary merit, and we were looking for books that had more of an impact. So while there may, in fact, be very strong and very good biographies or autobiographies, the question is, does it have that kind of influence in American culture or in terms of how Americans see themselves? I think you can argue that with Ben Franklin, certainly. You can
argue that with
Malcolm X and a couple of others. But others, I think, fall to the side, partly in terms of influence.
I want to remind our listeners, we're visiting with Mark Jimunation. I'm sorry, I apologize. Chief of the Library's Rare Book and Special Collection Division at the Library of Congress. I want to just digress just for a second. How do you get a library card at the Library of Congress?
Thank you for asking that, because I think this is something that people don't really realize. The Library of Congress is a public library.
Yeah.
And anyone over the age of 16, regardless of where they're from, if they have a picture ID, get a reader's card. And with that reader's card, you're given access to everything that the Library of Congress owns, except certain manuscript collections and certain other pieces that might be too fragile to look at.
Oh, sure.
But certainly, every single book that's on this list, you can come to my reading room and look at.
Wow. That's very cool. And can I get a card online? Or do I have to show up? Show you,
you have to be present to get a card because it's a picture ID.
Exactly. Makes sense. Yeah. That's very good to know. And you know, for people that, I think a lot of people sometimes, you know, you hear Library of Congress all the time, Library of Congress. They're not really too sure what the Library of Congress really is. I mean, it's America's library, and it is the largest repository of information about
in
our country
world.
In the world.
Yes.
It's amazing.
The Library of Congress is the largest library in the world, about 180 million items in all kinds of formats. In many cases, the largest collection of its kind in terms of prints and photographs.
Yeah.
Television, radio, sound, American folk writers. It's an extraordinary record of the efforts and hopes and visions of the American people, but it's also the history of communication.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's fascinating. Let's take it back to the list just for a second. The exhibit closed in September, and I'm assuming that while the exhibit, how long was the exhibit up? Exhibit up, Mark.
The exhibit up was up for a few months. It was in preparation for the book festival itself. Yes.
And I'm assuming that people had and still have a chance to comment on on the books that are there and books that they would have liked to have seen there, or why was such and such? Is that true?
That's correct. Book festival was going on, we were actively polling people right at the exhibition. But if you go to www.loc.gov and find your way to the exhibition Books That Shaped America, you'll find an opportunity to respond. It's been a very active dialogue. I have to say the best part was standing in the exhibition hall and watching parents point to books and tell their children what the books were about, only to have the children turn around and point to books and look up at their parents and acknowledge the fact that they had read them.
Yes.
So there's a nice mix that way, and many people have walked out vowing to go back and read some of these materials.
Well, I mentioned to Anne before we went on the air what was most... I was fascinated by this list, but what was most discouraging was how few of those books I've actually read.
I thought you were going to complain that I didn't include Giants of the Earth.
Oh, that's so depressing.
No. But I was going to ask you, and at least that you have heard, what book caused the most controversy? What book was on that it was on there caused the most controversy?
In terms of negative reaction?
Yeah, I guess I would say negative reaction.
There was a misunderstanding. Let me put it. There was a misunderstanding on the part of many people when they were commenting that they lost the fact that these had to be American books. So there was a constant questioning of how we dare not include the Bible.
Sure, of course.
So there was a good deal of that. People weren't really so much arguing against books as arguing for books.
Uh-huh.
There was a sort of very strong Ayn Rand lobby for Fountainhead, and in fact, it came out as the most heavily voted for book, ultimately.
Oh, really?
Yes, followed by Common Sense.
Uh-huh.
And the top five included one sort of perennial favorite, which would be To Kill a Mockingbird. Number five was actually Alcoholics Anonymous.
Really?
So, and on the top 10, you could pretty much predict the books that they were the books with strong impact. Yeah, so it was interesting to see people's reactions in terms of that. Strong negative reaction. I think people needed certain books explained why they were on the list.
Yep.
Tarzan came up that way. People were surprised. And friends of mine asked about why.
I was going to ask you about Tarzan. I was also going to ask you about the Zane Grey book. There's no question that Zane Grey is, one of the most recognized, well-known Western authors, but...
In both of those cases, in some cases we included titles that we felt were the first of a phenomenon, where the phenomenon is really what we were interested in. And in the case of Zane Grey, we're really looking at the first really viable Western that then is followed by 6,000 other titles that you could just as easily place. But it goes back to 1912, I believe, and so it's a placeholder for other Westerns. Tarzan, on the other hand, although we see it as a popular story, people... don't pause to realize how pervasive that is in our culture.
Mm.
The notion of Tarzan, the story of Tarzan, the films, the comic books, the products. And so this is one of those sort of more of a cultural moment where a character, a notion takes hold and just plays through American culture.
Gosh, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in these discussions because you really went...
What book do you think is lacking on this list? What's your first impression?
Yeah, I do have a book in mind, but it's more a period. There was nothing that I saw, unless I missed it, that related to Vietnam. And I thought that Vietnam in that time period had a tremendous cultural impact, and so I might have suggested The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, but only as representative of some of the work that was done around that. But
yeah, I think the committee felt that Catch-22, although it came out in the 60s, really came to popularity during Vietnam.
Yeah, true.
But that's a point well taken, which is what's interesting about this list. It's hard to argue against many suggestions. People have recommended lots of things that aren't on this list.
Oh, sure.
We can do another list. The Book of Mormon, My Antonia by Willa Cather. People have many, many ideas as to what should be on the list.
Yeah.
Mark, this is Anne. How long were you hashing this out before you came up with the list?
It was shorter than we would like to acknowledge in the sense that this should have been.
Oh, go ahead. We're a small radio station in northern Minnesota.
This should have been been probably a long project, but we were really...
A couple of hours on a Tuesday afternoon.
It came from, you know, a lot of work on the individual curators before they came to the table. So a lot of that legwork happened before we actually sat down to do the list. And since we meant to really kind of just sort of provoke a dialogue, we were comfortable. Although it was surprising, there were certain books that just simply... were on all four lists, and we understood what we were doing, and then there were others where we just argued and argued and argued about them. And I didn't get all my books on, I might add, even though I was kind of persuasive, I thought.
Well, that was a very graceful dodge of that question.
Oh, about how long it really took?
Yeah.
It was in the planning for about half a year, I would say.
I would think so. Now, obviously, as we mentioned, the exhibition is down, the list remains. Will there be books added to the list, or I mean, and I'm assuming people. You mentioned that people can still comment because they can go to loc.gov. Will there be? Do you think there'll be books added to the list?
I think we're parlaying it in a number of ways. There may very well be an entire second list, which would be the response list, which would be kind of interesting, don't you think?
I certainly do.
And more recently, I've been giving talks in public libraries, and it seemed to have become an interesting touchstone for libraries to bring in book groups and readers and to have local conversations about this very topic, where people bring forward their suggestions and talk about their experiences with these books. It's been really interesting, quite passionate, and revealing in some cases when people have the opportunity to begin to recall about how important books were to them. I mean, fundamentally, we want people to walk away with the notion that there's some reading to be done,
yes,
and that these books that books can actually shape America. Now, today at the Library of Congress, we just finished a two-day summit on the first international summit on the book. And although that was dealing with the book as a cultural object, past and present, I have to say I made note of it. Four of the books on this list were mentioned in the last 2 days.
Oh.
Rachel Carson was mentioned, for example.
50th anniversary,
as an example,
I think,
of a, Silent Spring, as an example of a book that had immediate political and cultural influence, and that's why we needed to make sure that books stayed alive in the future. So it's also playing through in the dialogue that Library of Congress is promoting in the next couple of years around the idea of books and people and culture and reading.
Well, I think that, first of all, you're exactly right. I'm sure everyone went away, I did, after looking at the list and think, oh, there's some reading to be done here. And the other one is just to get people talking about. I mean, whether or not, excuse me, I agree with all the books or don't agree with all the books, to have that conversation and for me to think about what books do I have a personal relationship with, you know, that I feel very strongly about, and to talk to other people about it. I think if that's the idea, I think it's a great one. I really
that's
do.
That's the perfect response to this exhibition. You're bringing up a book that came out in Vietnam because of your own experience and age is exactly it. And the fact that someone's sitting across from you and is hearing a personal relation, a personal reaction to a book, and the fact that it had meaning in a certain place and time, it can't get much better than that.
Yeah, I agree. We have been visiting with Mark Diminution. Mark is chief of the library's Rare Book and Special Collection Division at the Library of Congress. He has joined us from Washington. Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us this Friday evening. I wish we had way more time because I can just think of lots of more questions I could ask, but I really do appreciate your taking the time.
Thanks. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Take care.